Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, tens of thousands of young people gather in Croatia to celebrate Europe's annual Teze meeting. We'll be hearing from one of the organizers. And as the Church remembers the Feast of the Holy Innocents, what one missionary is doing to empower children and the poor in an unexpected place. Thanks for joining me. Young adults from all over Europe and across the world are gathering in Zagreb, Croatia for the 29th annual European meeting organized by the Teze community. The focus of the event, which concludes January 1st, is overcoming defeatism by choosing love. The program includes prayer and reflection workshops, which are being held in Zagreb's exhibition center, as well as in churches, museums, and mosques around the city. Spokesperson for the event is Brother Emil of the Teze community. He talked to Catherine Smybert about the importance of the event and how it continues the legacy of his community's founder, Brother Roger, also known as Brother Roger.
There have been European meetings every year since the late 70s, and Brother Roger had the idea many years ago, mainly preoccupied by the discouragement that there is in society in general, and perhaps in particular with young people, how to help them not give in to discouragement. So we've done this in many cities of Eastern Europe, Western Europe, but this is the first time in Croatia, a country where the wounds of the war are still very fresh. And so I think that's what's special about being in this year in Croatia, is being in a place where that has suffered only just a few years ago, the wounds of war, and how now to open up a new chapter in the history of Europe in this part of Europe. One of the things I think that young people go back with after a European meeting is a sense of prayer. Prayer will bring everyone together three times each day throughout the whole meeting, throughout the 4.5 days that we're together. And certainly that is one of the main wellsprings that they will draw from in the next few days. The second thing, of course, is meeting people from all over Europe who are searching, who come with open hearts, open minds. And that's one of the very positive traits, I think, of young people today, is there is this desire to meet people who are different, people who have a different story, a different culture. And so that's going to happen in many simple ways. To live a kind of parable, I think that parable is a good word. Jesus spoke in parables. And a European meeting is a little bit like a parable of the Church, where something of the universality of the Church can be seen and can be experienced by people.
The Teze meeting has received messages of support from Pope Benedict XVI, along with a variety of world religious and political leaders.
I think the messages that come from church leaders, Pope Benedict, the Patriarch of Moscow, the Patriarch of Constantinople, or the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Kofi Annan, I think they showed their trust in young people, because young people are the ones who must build the society that is to come, and how to create enthusiasm in young people, not the desire to escape from reality, to rest from reality simply, but how to create an enthusiasm for the challenges that are ahead of us. And I think that's one of the great questions of leaders today. It's not enough to analyze the problems. It's not enough to know what has to be done or what should be done, but it's how to find the energy, the momentum, do these things. And I think that's what a European meeting is all about, really. It's helping young people discover momentum, a desire, the energy to be creative today. And that's certainly what interests, I think, political leaders as well, because that's one of the most difficult things to do. There's so much skepticism when it comes to building something in society that that certainly many are intrigued by the fact that these young people come together with such a strong desire to build together.
But for those of us who can't be there on the ground in Zagreb over those days, how can people get involved from afar?
Well, certainly people can accompany us by praying for all the young people who are here and gathered. But these young people will go back to their countries also, and we are always sending them back to their parishes, to their churches. That's part of the messages of Teze. Teze is not a movement, so we encourage the young people to go back to their churches. And maybe when they go back, it would be great if they could share, if people could invite them to speak in their churches and get to know what they experienced. Young people are so touched to be invited and to know that there's a place for them, that they are expected, that they are taken seriously in their aspirations, in their hopes. And so maybe that's one of the ways also when they return, one of the ways of sharing with them, of accompanying them is to find ways of listening to them and maybe they could tell others what they experienced.
Indeed, yeah. Young people were a very special focus of the late Brother Roger in the work that he did. And of course, we do remember his death during August, actually at the beginning, what marked the beginning of the World Youth Day, the Catholic World
yes.
Youth Day of 2005. How are these occasions continuing to respect the legacy that he has so marvellously set up?
Yes, I think that's what strikes people who are taking part in the meetings in the last 2 years, the second European meeting without Brother Roger, is that there is continuity. There is a faithfulness, I believe, to the legacy that is the legacy of Brother Roger, and especially I think in the simplicity that Brother Roger cherished continues in the way that things are organized, in the prayers, in the songs, and in the way people relate to one another. And I think also in the courage that Brother Roger had to create with very little. No, he wanted always people to live the first beatitude, blessed are the poor in spirit, to create with what we have, not to dream about a perfect church or a perfect society, but to start with what is there. And that goes on in Zagreb, and it's what happens here, and Brother Alois continued in that same spirit, and we'll talk every evening, just like Brother Roger used to do every evening, give a simple meditation, to try to open up access. Open up access to young people to the sources of our faith and of our hope. Brother Roger was very aware that young people often don't have the keys to have access to a complicated heritage, a complicated way of talking about the faith. But if we can give them the possibility of finding in the gospel, in prayer, in their experience of the church, with great simplicity, trying to live out a parable, if we can give them access to those sources of faith, then we are helping them find hope and helping them to go forward.
And our thanks there to Brother Emil of the Teze community. He was speaking there to Catherine Smybert. Well, for more information and to be able to follow the Teze meeting in Croatia, you can do so via their website. That's www.teze.fr. Back a few years, doesn't it? Well, Bob Marley's One Love and its message of social harmony and justice seem to sum up my guest today, an unusual man with a mission of mercy.
My desire is to serve the poor and to realize that the poor can teach us. It's a two-way street.
It wasn't long after his transfer as a young New York priest to Jamaica, more than a quarter century ago, that Monsignor Richard Albert realized he had a lot to learn from the poor. So much, in fact, that he's still working at it.
I like to say to people, when I first became a missionary, I was young and dumb, because I thought that, I was going to do great things for God and I was going to bring a lot of people close to Jesus. Well, God has done a lot of great things for me. It's the poor who taught me what it means to truly depend on the Lord in poverty. It's the poor who have really taught me that God has a plan for every single one of us. You want to see a poor person, I have a home for those who have leprosy. And George is 85 and he's blind, crippled, face distorted, and yet he's thanking God for all the wonderful things God has done for him when I say Mass there on Wednesdays. It's the poor who teach us. It's the poor who can convert us. I give thanks to God that I'm on the way to conversion. Not converted yet, but I'm on the way.
Well, Monsignor Albert may think he's not converted yet, but that's hard to believe. This balding, stately man with piercing eyes and a thick Bronx twang has worked his way up to regional director for the Antilles for the Pontifical Mission for Holy Childhood. His St. Patrick's Foundation in Jamaica has grown into a conglomerate of 5 self-help and educational centers for young people and the elderly of the greater Kingston inner city and ghettos. I couldn't help but ask how he ever got started.
It became very overwhelming after a while. So many people needed things. One person had asked money to go to school. Another would ask to pay a school bill. Another would come and say they need food. And so I was becoming overwhelmed by all the individual requests. And
but they were all coming from Catholics?
Coming from everyone in the neighborhood. Coming from people living on the garbage dump. People that are just roaming the streets. I started a foundation, and it started with a group of little old ladies, poor ladies, who said to me, "Father, we have to help some people. The people in the area are hungry." I said, "Well, what should we do?" And they said, "Let's start a soup kitchen." And so we got a tire rim, and got some charcoal from someone, and we started cooking. And then the young people came and said, "What about us?" And I had guys that were 18, 19, 20 years old that were illiterate, couldn't read or write, couldn't tell time. And
they were all helping you out.
Right. And the desire then was to see what we could do for them. And the whole maxim of give someone a fish today, you feed them for today, but teach them to fish, they eat for life.
Monsignor Albert is now feeding and providing career training to 1,200 kids a day, teaching them the skills they need to eat for life.
We teach them woodwork, sewing, tailoring, computering, welding, catering now, and give them a skill, and then try to place them in work. And if we can't place them in work, we try to start them off on their own. Like a little girl can do baking sweet things, and she sells them and she can support herself. So the whole idea is to help them become self-reliant. The whole idea is to really help them become their own person so that they're not dependent on anyone. Dependency is another form of slavery. I don't want anyone dependent on me. I want to free them.
Now, did you start all this off with people knocking on your door, or did you go out and actually look for people in the slums?
No, it was all around. It was all around me. I mean, whether they came to my door or whether I walked on the street, you could see hundreds of boys and girls sitting there, you know, idle, not doing anything. You could see old people that were abandoned and hungry. And I started a home for the abandoned elderly that also includes those who have leprosy now. And, because no one wants them, they had nowhere to go, and yet they form a beautiful, perfect family. And they're a great witness of faith, and they're a tremendous example of love to people who come and visit the home.
Do you see yourself that all of these initiatives have changed the lives of so many people?
I have some wonderful examples of one boy. I had these little treats to give out. They're like hamburgers. And one boy stood online, Roger, and usually all the kids would eat it right away, and Roger didn't eat it. He rolled it up in a napkin. And I said, Roger, you're not hungry. And he said, well, today is my sister's turn to eat. And that's when I discovered in my neighborhood that people take turns eating.
Because you can only feed so many?
That's right, only because I can only feed so much and so many when I get what I can. And I went up to the North Coast where all the beaches are and where all the vacations are and all the holiday resort areas are. And I walked into a dining room of a very famous hotel. And I sat down with the owner of the hotel, and the maitre d' from the dining room came, and he was very nice to the owner. And then he turned to me and said, yeah, buddy, what do you want? He was very rough with me. And I said, what is this? And he took the order of the other man, and then he turned to me and said, I don't have all day. What do you want? And then he smiled, and he said, Monsignor, you don't recognize me. I'm Christopher, and I went through your first program. And now I'm head of the dining room.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, I give thanks to God. Thanks to God that I could be an instrument to free someone. And Christopher was a rough kid, but now today he's self-reliant.
When you say rough, you mean he was involved in...
Yeah, he was on the fringe of becoming a criminal almost. We have boys and girls, really not boys and girls anymore, they're young men and young women working in almost every aspect of industry in Jamaica. Tourism, the airlines, marketing programs, the shops, so that we have many different people working in different areas. And that's the success when, you know, a kid calls me and says, Father, I got the job. Then I know... You know, it's all worth it. But people just need an opportunity, and that's hopefully what I do. I try to create an opportunity where people can get ahead, where I want that after they've met me, they're better human beings, not only practically, but morally, spiritually, emotionally. And that's why in all of our programs we have a course for 3 weeks before they begin to learn a skill, personal hygiene, conflict resolution, just trying to know who they are as a person. And God has been good.
When you say conflict resolution, are you talking about just everyday conflict, tension between you and a friend or the guy down the block?
Yeah, it can be conflict resolution, can be relegated to just a problem and a difficulty with your neighbor. It can be also, the gun business, the knife business. It can be, you know, this tremendous activity that goes on between criminals. And so we try to teach the kids from young.
What do you tell them?
Well, there's a whole series of developments in conflict resolution that you begin with that you try to point out to them that they can accomplish much more from a peaceful approach to a problem, and that violence doesn't retain their humanity, it destroys it. And you give them examples, and slowly but surely it has an effect.
What's the most frustrating thing that you keep finding yourself coming up against?
That I don't have enough money to help more people.
You're talking about that young little boy who said it was his sister's turn to eat. Do you ever feel that your hands are tied? That these are people you want to reach, but you can't?
No. It's not that my hands are tied. It's just that the resources are so slim, you know, to reach out to people, to include more kids in the programs. We turn away people. We turn away kids every year because we don't have enough room. Sometimes I can only feed people 3 times a week, the poor, elderly, who are left all by themselves.
What happens to the other 4 days?
Well, they just, you know, hold on as best they can, and they drink sugar and water which sustains them. It's intense poverty, but, you know, we make every attempt. We do the best we can. With all the more resources we get, the more people we help.
Where do you get your funding?
I get my funding mainly through my mailing list, people that want to write me and send me. You know, I've had some beautiful things. I had one woman who was 88 years old in the hospital. She saw my interview on 60 Minutes with Christiane Amanpour, and she said, "I'm an 88-year-old woman. I've lost my second leg to diabetes, but I saw the film, and I'd like to send you this $10 to feed someone." People send, you know, every month. Some people send once a year. Some people send twice a year. But it's mostly through people that I make an appeal to, and it's my mailing list.
Those $10 that lady sent to you, what can you do with those $10?
A $10 can practically feed an old person for a week. They can buy enough rice, cornmeal, flour to put together to feed themselves each day. It's incredible how far it goes.
What did people think about you when you were first getting involved in this? What do they still think about you, this New York guy walking around the slums? What do they think about?
Well, when they first saw me, there was questions raised and all. But now after 26 years and I've taken on Jamaican citizenship, I think they see me as one of their own, and I give thanks for that.
I see you're very moved by it.
Yes, I get very emotional when I think of the great grace God has given me to do this. I certainly am not worthy of the opportunity, but I've been able to help so many people. And I've been able to do this, and not because of my own. I have a great group of collaborators, the people that send me money, that support me. But just to see someone become a total, full human being is a great gift and is a great grace. And whatever good I've done, it's because of God and His grace and His strength to let me do it. And I just love doing it.
Do you feel that you've brought people closer to the church through all of these activities?
As a Catholic priest, I'm there because I believe that's where Christ would be, with the poor, with the marginalized, with those that are weak and struggling. And that's why I'm there. Not to proselytize, not to make the world Catholic. I'm there because that's where the Master would be. And as a faltering disciple, that's where I want to try to be. So that's first of all. Many people come and say, you know, why do you do this? And they begin to ask. And all throughout my centers, I have a picture of Mother Teresa. I have a crucifix. There is a religious moral tone to everything. But I'm there not to proselytize, but to proclaim a gospel of love, a gospel of service, a gospel of care to people. And people get attracted, and people begin to ask questions. And people then, all of a sudden, you see a kid that you never thought, and he's in the back of the church looking, not too sure, very skeptical. And all of a sudden, he turns out to be, you know, a magnificent lector or director of altar service.
And my thanks there to Monsignor Richard Albert, Regional Director for the Antilles, for the Pontifical Mission for Holy Childhood. If you'd like to make a donation to the St. Patrick Foundation, or if you'd simply like to volunteer to help, you can write Monsignor Albert directly on his email address. That's Stella Maris, M-A-R-I-S, at Casnet, casnet.com. As the church marks the feast of the Holy Innocents, those children killed by King Herod as he strove to wipe out all those who might be the baby king born in Bethlehem, I'd like to leave you with this Christmastime reflection. The International Director of the Jesuit Refugee Service, Father Luis Magrinha, calls us to remember the innocent children who today all too often find themselves victims of war, circumstance, and indifference.
At Christmas time, the thoughts of the Jesuit Refugee Service go out to the many thousands of migrant and refugee children and their families who spend this special time behind bars. They have been locked up for fleeing conflict, persecution, and poverty. The tension is inherently invisible, but the imprisonment of children solely for fleeing conflict, persecution, and extreme poverty is inhuman. For the last 25 years, we have witnessed in our work how the detention of these children aggravates the psychological harm caused by their exile. GRS understands that the states have the right to manage the flow of migrants across their borders, but the freedom from arbitrary detention is a fundamental human right. Detention centers cannot offer children an environment conducive to healthy development. Children are frequently detained in conditions that are degrading or dangerous, denied access to education and places to play. Unfortunately, this is what's happening for thousands of children around the world. Some countries lack the resources to provide alternatives to the detention of vulnerable refugee children. In fact, last year, when a group of trafficked refugee children were apprehended in a southern Africa country, the authorities had no alternative means of protection other than detaining them with adults. These countries need assistance to protect refugee children in their countries. For years, thousands of children have been held in immigration detention centers in developed countries, sometimes for years. They are routinely exposed to violence, their mental health regularly deteriorates to the point where they committed acts of self-harm. Some countries have ended these policies and now allow refugee children, otherwise in detention, to live freely with their families. This shows that where the desire exists, governments do not have to detain children or their families. This could be a good message for Christmas. This is Father Luis Magrina, International Director of Jesuit Refugee Service, and I would like to wish you a happy Christmas and a joyous New Year.
And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to contact us, why not send us an email? Our address is 105live@vatiradio.va. That's 105live@vatiradio.va. And if you don't have a computer, don't worry. We like snail mail, too. Drop us a line to the English Service, Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, 00120, Vatican City. Don't forget, you can also hear this and other programs produced by the English Service on our website. Just log on to vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English Service. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.